This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is derived from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Hope you had a nice Memorial Day and remembered those who gave their lives for us. And in studio is Trey Orso, the distinguished Democratic political operative, former chair, former executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, and he's been a political operative now for well over 20 years, and during that time, 4 years ago, actually it was 8 years ago, 2015, he led the charge with his partner Michael Baychuk for Gumbo Pack. And Gumbo Pack was the undoing of one David Bruce Vitter, as that independent organization with left leanings ended up uncovering nuggets of information along with John Bel Edwards' political advisor Mary Patricia Ray. And the prostitution issue was probably the biggest issue of the year of 2015 when John Bel Edwards scored an upset and beat David Vitter. This year is different, but we're 18 weeks from Saturday is Election Day, getting close, and Jeff Landry is the front runner. Like 2015, there's only one Democrat in the field right now, Sean Wilson, who's playing the John Bel Edwards role, and with us to talk about it, not only Trey Orso, but the former state senator and state representative Troy Hebert, who has the distinction of having defeated Jeff Landry. Landry has noted that he's 3-2 overall in races, and three victories in big races for Congress and twice for Attorney General, but a loss to Troy Hebert and a loss to Charles Bustani. And good morning to both of you, and good to have Troy and Trey with us. Troy Hebert, Jeff Landry was listening last time you were talking about him, and he was, I think, pleased, maybe a bit surprised to hear that you're supporting him. Is that still the case?
Well, good morning, Jim and Trey, and to your listeners. Well, I don't know. I think, you know, Jeff and I, you know, politics is politics. And since our race some years ago, we've actually made up and become, you know, friends again. And so that's just the way politics are. Now, maybe our wives won't forgive us, but we forgave each other.
And you said he came after you hard. Jeff Landry has a reputation of leaving no stone uncovered. And we talked about how he depicted you as a ladies' man. And did you like that, or did it get under your skin?
Well, you know, first of all, he blamed me for everything since the killing of Kennedy, and I wasn't even born then. But I did what a lot of good politicians did. I hired one of the best. I actually hired Trey Orso to help me defend all of that stuff. So it's kind of funny. It's good to be with my buddy, my old friend Trey, on this phone call. You know, I like to say this. People say a lot of things about me, and half of them are true. You just got to find out which half and which half is not.
And you're a guy who doesn't hold back, which sometimes drives consultants crazy. And I do recall you acknowledging that, quote, sweetness is your weakness.
Well, you know, everybody has a vice. I don't drink, I don't gamble, and I don't smoke. So we'll leave the rest up to the audience to decide.
And that never hurt Edwin Washington Edwards, Louisiana politico like no other. But usually there are scandals, as Robert Penn Warren noted with Willie Stark and all the King's Men. There's always something. There's always something. And now we're in a day, Trey Orso, and you proved it with Gumbo Pack, that sometimes there's something and more than something, and sometimes something means more than other times. So is there anything out there in the home stretch that could undo any of these candidates that you know about right now that you can speak of at this moment?
Hey, Jim and Troy, thank you, as always, for having me on this morning. You know, I think there's a lot out there, and the race really hasn't engaged yet. You know, a few of the campaigns are up with some, you know, bio ads that are not really saying anything at all. but I think the voters are not yet engaged in the campaign and not really paying attention. And it's early. We're still in May. And so I think there's a lot left to be said about this governor's race. We're barely at the starting line. And once these campaigns start focusing a little bit more attention on each other, I think things will heat up a little bit.
Well, we're in a case where Jeff Landry is the front runner, as David Vitter was 8 years ago. And does that mean that there will be some kind of independent option like Gumbo Pack knocking at him, tearing him apart, doing its best to bring him back to the pack?
Well, I think it's the worst kept secret in Louisiana that there's just a large percentage of people that can't stand the idea of Jeff Landry becoming governor. A lot of folks, as you mentioned earlier, are scared to say that out loud because, you know, that just like David Vitter in 2015, a lot of people are afraid of Jeff Landry. When I say afraid, politically afraid, you know, and they don't want to speak up against him for fear of political retribution. But I can tell you there's an appetite of people for people out there that will want to make sure that he does not get the keys to the mansion. So I would suspect that at some point relatively soon, you'll start seeing, you know, things take place to educate the voters about his record. If there's one person running in this race that there plenty could be said about, it would be the Attorney General. He has a robust file.
Well, he's the best known and the most criticized and I guess the most revered. And he does have the endorsement of the guy who's the most popular politician in the history of Louisiana, and that's Donald John Trump, who won two landslides, got 85% of the white vote twice in our state. And he has his machine behind one Jeff Landry.
He also came to the state three times personally for Eddie Rasponi in 19.
That's correct. And my contention would be that if he had not come three times, Eddie Rasponi would have lost by a lot more than 40,000 votes. He helped him, but he didn't help him enough. And Donald Trump is popular in Louisiana. He's unpopular in many other parts of this country, and he's never gotten a plurality of the vote. I don't think he's ever cracked 47% in a national election, but in the South, whole different story in the SEC. Donald Trump is king of the conference. 877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org if you'd like to join the conversation. And a listener asked Troy and Trey about the four other Republicans, and there, of course, there is an independent, Hunter Lundy, who also is a legitimate candidate and one capable of gaining traction, and he is campaigning with earnest, and he has a message, and he may even be more conservative on social issues than Jeff Landry. But what about the four Republicans? It would seem in an open primary that really helps. The more Republicans, the merrier for Jeff Landry. The whole idea for him is to make a runoff with Sean Wilson. Do you think four Republicans will stay in the race? We're talking about John Schroeder and Stephen Wagspak and Richard Nelson and Sharon Hewitt. What do you think?
Right now,
well,
I haven't
Jim,
seen...
You know,
oh, go ahead, Troy.
No, well, I was just going to say, I mean, obviously Trey's the professional in this, but, you know, I've been successful in five races, and I think what you said, it, you know, hits the nail right on the head. I think right now this race is not to win for governor. This race is to make the runoff for governor. And it's kind of like the Donald Trump scenario back in the day when he ran the first time. The more the merrier, as you mentioned, Jim, because, you know, Jeff comes with a built-in base, a very conservative base, a base that probably won't leave him like Donald Trump's voters didn't leave him. So the question is can those other ones chip away enough at him to keep him out of that runoff with the Democrat? And I think that's where the race is at right now.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Troy.
I was just saying, to answer your question, I haven't seen any indication of anyone dropping out yet, although, as you would not be surprised, the Republican candidates don't call and
talk to you about it. No, but they all seem to be serious, and they all in their own way are legitimate candidates. Certainly Schroeder is. He's got a statewide position. Nelson is, if we're going to do smart, he's probably the guy with the highest IQ in the field and a charismatic guy, but it doesn't really have the resources that one would think would be necessary to win. And the other two are Sharon Hewitt is well-known as a lawmaker and the only woman in the field, which could help her. Even Melissa Flournoy was saying nice things about Sharon Hewitt. But another listener notes, and this is a good point, will the Democrats be able to keep the field clear for Sean Wilson, another Democrat getting in the race for this office would be music to the ears of all four of the Republicans who are challenging Jeff Landry. If somebody can peel 10-15% off Sean Wilson, then suddenly it might be two Republicans in the runoff, Trey.
That is true. And after working in politics my entire professional life, I can say that two of the hardest things to do are to recruit candidates or keep people out of campaigns, out of races. It's just hard. That's hard work. But now, I haven't seen any indication of any significant or major Democrat talking about jumping in the governor's race. I haven't heard of it, haven't heard rumors of it, haven't heard any talk about it.
But if a Gary Chambers were to have a change of heart and get in, it would be a nightmare for Sean Wilson.
Of course, that's true.
Yeah. Yes. Hiller Moore was looking at it, I think he would have run if he would have been assured that the field would have been clear, but he couldn't get that assurance. But if he were to get in, he could still, at this point, potentially be in a runoff. And Jim Nickel says that if he's in a runoff, he's the next governor of Louisiana. So we'll talk more with Trey Orso and with Troy Hebert, Trey and Troy, back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Troy Hebert and Trey Orso with us. Troy is now an independent, but leans right. He's a Trump supporter and a Jeff Landry supporter. And Trey Orso is a Democrat all the way. And he was involved intricately in the successful move to defeat David Vitter in 2015. 877-217-5757. Bill Huey writes, can Trey and Troy tell us why Jeff Landry appears to be running for Baton Rouge Chief of Police? He says the ad is off the wall, but crime is a big issue. If you were his political consultant, would you be doing the same thing?
Well, I mean, you know, Landry is going to do, he's going to do that. The Republicans are going to talk about crime. He really isn't offering any solutions for it. He mentions that he's been the top law enforcement officer. Clancy has a great column in the paper today that calls him out for that. If you know, he's been the top law enforcement officer in the state for the last 8 years. Why is crime still so bad if, you know, he obviously hadn't been doing his job? So,
Let's get Troy's take on this, whether crime is the salient issue in this race. Troy, is that the issue above all others, or will ultimately come down to other matters?
Well, look, obviously they're out in the field with some very sophisticated polling data that tells them that crime moves the needle. But the interesting part about Jeff talking about crime, if he's the guy out in front and saying he's the crime fighter in the race, you know, think about crime. Crime is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. I mean, blacks, whites, rich, poor, nobody wants crime in a neighborhood. They want their kids to be safe. They want to sleep well at night. So I think he's got an issue right there. It looks like he's jumping in front of it, and I think that's smart on his part.
Well, I would think it will be one of the major issues. But Jeff Landry, of course, is culturally quite conservative and is not afraid to have the viewpoints politically that are in line with his personal beliefs, but some people believe that will help him or it will hurt him. Trey, how do you see it?
I think he would pretty much say whatever he thought he needed to say at the time to get elected to anything. That's what I think about it.
So you're saying that he's somewhat like John Kennedy, that he reads a poll and makes up his mind. Others say that, hey, this guy is the real deal, that he's not playing games,
I think that's where the winds are blowing, that wing of the Republican Party right now, and he thinks that's kind of riding that popular wave right now. Mm-hmm. If it, you know, when the tide swings back the other way, if he's still in the public domain, you could just as easily see
back. Some politicians, maybe all successful ones, to some extent follow the tide of public opinion, or they wouldn't be where they are. But Troy Hebert, is Jeff Landry pretty pure on these issues, or is he playing an act like obviously our junior senator is, the guy who was a liberal Democrat not so long ago?
Well, I think both is true. You know, obviously, yes, he's a very astute politician, and he's going to follow those winds. But, I mean, as the chief law enforcement officer in the state, I think he has recognized a couple issues that's part of the problem, and that's our judicial system. When you have some district attorneys and others that's gone soft on people, I think that actually hits a nerve with people. I think, again, across both party lines. And, you know, Jeff, and again, I told you this last time when I said I support him. The reason I support him is that he actually doesn't mind taking the hit politically on some things. He doesn't mind going and be the bad guy and taking some tough positions, even though it might not be popular with some people. And I can assure you, him talking about DAs not doing their job, that's, you know, that's pretty ballsy. And you got to give him credit for that.
Well, it's a racial issue to some extent, but another listener notes that, maybe more than some extent, but another listener notes that Cleo Fields and Tony Clayton, Tim Hardy, legitimate and strong and veteran African-American leaders in Louisiana, they've always had nice things to say about Jeff Landry. So, and he went to Southern Law School, Trey. It doesn't appear to me that the man's a racist. He's very conservative, but does that necessarily mean he's a racist?
Well, I never said he was a racist.
Well, some others are implying that, obviously.
Oh, or the way he set up this crime ad, people are implying it's racist because in New Orleans and in Shreveport, he shows the images of the African-American politicians when he says the DAs and we're holding everybody accountable. He shows the black DA in Caddo, and he shows a image of Mayor Cantrell in New Orleans. But in the ad in Baton Rouge, when he says we're going to hold everyone accountable, he does not show an image of Hiller Moore, the white DA here.
Right.
And so the district attorney, can't recall his name, in Caddo has really taken exception to that and has says you can call it what it is, but it seems rather obvious to him.
Well, Saturday, the front page of The Advocate had the chief of police in Baton Rouge, Murphy Paul, front and center, saying that the homicides were horrible and that there were reasons beyond his control. And on a regular basis, he gets slammed for this, and maybe for good reason, but why doesn't the white sheriff get slammed too? Sid Gautreaux gets a pass. Why does he get a pass when Murphy Paul seems to be the guy who gets slammed all the time?
All those are fair questions. I think the public would be better served instead of fear-mongering ads talking about how bad. Oh, yeah, we do have crime problem. You know, the other day in the paper, in The Advocate, that crime blotter section that they do about a half a page on, it had about 8 articles. I meant to cut it out and save it for the show. The header of all 8 had the word shot or shooting in them. All 8.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a crime, but instead of fear-mongering ads about how bad crime is, how about laying out some plans about how we're going to improve education so that people can get a better start in life and how we're going to bring some new jobs in the state. Let's talk about the housing problem that we have in Louisiana after all these strings of natural disasters and talk about what are we going to do so that people can afford to live in the houses if they're lucky enough to have one, because insurance rates are doubling each year. But no, you don't hear that from these candidates for governor. They're just running ads with handcuffs and, you know, lights, because that appeals.
This goes back to George Bush the first and Michael Dukakis and Willie Horton.
It works.
That's why they do
it. Doing a disservice.
I don't think George Bush the first was a racist, but he won a campaign campaign.
The reason we have a crime problem in the state is because we're not adequately taking care of our education system and housing problem.
All right.
And addressing the insurance crisis.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Troy Hebert and Trey Orso.
Yes, sir. How you doing? Let's just put it that easy. The state trooper incident that happened in North Louisiana. I know Jeff Landry, you know, says that he had to remove himself from the case and couldn't prosecute anything like that. And the district attorney in Cato Parish actually wound up making the first move and passing it on to the federal. But did the DA, as Jeff Landry, do anything, and is stating anything dealing with the state police and how they should have been handled by his office? Thank you.
All right. Troy, let's get your take on that. Governor Edwards has been criticized for the way he handled the Ronald Green case. What about Jeff Landry?
Well, I don't know all the particulars on what Jeff did or didn't do, or the Caddo Parish DA did or didn't do, but I can tell you this, that when you look at the facts of that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But when you look at the facts of that case, I mean, my question is why isn't somebody fired? Why isn't somebody not going to jail over that deal? It's pretty cut and dry. I mean, it's on video. I mean, seeing is believing. But yet you have people who just get to retire and draw their retirement system, I mean, why isn't somebody losing their jobs? Why aren't heads rolling? And, you know, if you're going to fight crime, you fight it like alcoholism. The first thing you do is admit that there's a problem. And I think that's what Jeff has done, is saying, hey, this is a problem. Are there going to be some solutions? I'm sure there's going to be time to talk about those. But I want to have a candidate that says, you know what, this is number one on my book. I want people to sleep well at night. I want people's children to be safe. And so I think that's where Jeff is in front of this. And as I mentioned before, I think it moves the needle. And you're right, Jim, it wins elections.
877-217-5757, another segment with Troy Hebert and Trey Orso coming your way after this timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Another half hour to go, and we'll spend a portion of that with our two politicos, Troy Hebert and Trey Orso. 877-217-5757 if you'd like to get in under the wire with Troy and Trey. Stuart, downtown Baton Rouge. Stuart, good morning.
Thank you, Jim. Your guests and the audience, good morning. For those who are alleging that Mr. Landry is, quote, not a racist, in the Blaine Salamone scenario, it has been stated that Mr. Salamone was under the influence of drugs and should have never been allowed to be a policeman. So I'm very confident that Jeff Landry was armed with this information, as all others are, were. Why is it that he did not do the right thing with this?
All right. Well, he did make a call on that and not to prosecute, but some would believe he should have, but the U.S. Justice Department didn't prosecute either. And Blaine Salamone, of course, is off the force, and the city of Baton Rouge paid a lot of money to the family of Alton Sterling. But is that an adequate resolution, Trey Orso, or should Jeff Landry, or Hiller Moore for that matter? He also recused himself. He would have been the prosecutor, but it fell in Jeff Landry's lap after Hiller Moore recused himself. What do you think?
Jim, I really have a hard time saying that without being able to look at how the lawyers and the prosecutors address those.
All right. Well, Troy Hebert, that's bringing back something that happened and seared this community 7 years ago. But I would imagine it'll be fair game in the campaign. I would think this will be an issue for whomever is the person to make a runoff with Jeff Landry, and I think he's likely to make a runoff. Troy?
Well, Jim, you pointed out, as far as for this particular case, I mean, even the Department of Justice didn't pursue it. So, but let me just say this. I've been knowing Jeff Landry most of my life. Jeff Landry is not a racist. He might be a lot of things, but a racist ain't one of them. He's born and raised in St. Martinville. If you go talk to the local community there, white or black leaders, they'll tell you that Jeff is a man of his word, that he actually he deals with all levels of problems, with all kind of people. And again, he might be a lot of things, but a racist ain't one of them.
Mitchell and Sherwood. Mitchell, please be brief. You're on with Trey and Troy. Hi, Mitchell.
Good day to you. Blaine Salamone, the Green case. Landry didn't take none of that up. If he's not a racist, what are these people? Good people? Come on, man. Y'all need to stop trying to trick people.
All right. Thank you, Mitchell and Sherwood. Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Kevin. You're on. Good morning, sir.
Yes. I don't care if he's racist or not. That's his problem. But if we get him in office, it's going to be just like Florida and Alabama and Texas. Don't have these Hispanic people leaving office. Don't have nobody doing the construction or picking fruits and vegetables. And we'll be sitting around here being laughed at. And a lot of people think it's funny because they've never been through nothing to know how it is to pack up and just leave after years.
All right. You're mentioning other states that are growing at a faster rate than Louisiana is. Louisiana's had a moderate governor the last 8 years, but I don't think population growth is one of the accomplishments of John Bel Edwards. But that also is an issue in this campaign. Troy Hebert, how do we get people to stop leaving and people to come to Louisiana? What can be done to attract more citizens?
Well, next to crime, I think that's probably one of the biggest issues. You know, I think Louisiana's lost more people from this state than I think there's in Lafayette, in the whole city of Lafayette, some quarter of a million people. And that's the real question, I believe, is, and is crime part of it? Yes, education, as Trey mentioned, is part of it. But this is a situation. Let's take a look at that. How does all these other southern states, let's not compare ourselves to the east or the west, but how do neighboring southern states continue to grow, have a better economy than ours, have people from Louisiana moving to them? What's our problem in Louisiana? What are we doing wrong? I don't know. We have some of the best politicians, I think, in the country, but we just have some of the worst statistics. So if I was a gubernatorial candidate, I think I would make that number one in my platform. And that is that don't you feel for the grandmothers and the mothers and grandfathers and fathers that have to get on a plane to go see their grandchildren and children? There's something wrong with that. And again, that's not Democrat or Republican. That crosses every sector of our society.
Troy, I mean, you raised some good points there, and I know you live near the coast. But Iberia, thank goodness, has been somewhat spared recently. I really think I've thought a lot about this population loss. If you think about Zeta, Ida, Laura, Delta, the floods of 16, the ice storm of whatever, 18, whatever year that was, maybe a little sooner, more recent than that. And you drive along coastal Louisiana below the intercoastal, but below I-10. And this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, the houses that are empty, the people that have moved. People can only take so much, and they need relief, and they need answers on how to be able to sustain life and build down there. And there's been our population has struggled, I think in large part because of the onslaught of natural disasters that we've had. Katrina, I know, was a long time ago,
in 2005. That's been a factor.
It's been a huge factor.
And it also probably is discouraging for some people who would like to move here.
Of course. As everybody knows, I like to fish. I have a place down in Fouchon, and I go down there, especially this time of year, almost every week. And just driving back and forth down in Lower Lafourche and Lower Terrebonne, there's still so much destruction down there from not only Ida, but Zeta before it, that there's just people have moved. They can only take so much.
Yeah. All right. This is something I've alluded to, and some would say it's in jest, but I don't think so. And this has been done before, but rarely have we had a candidate with a last name as common in Louisiana as Landry. And you got to believe there are a lot of Jeff Landrys. And this listener, Joe in Napoleonville, and I looked it up, he's got the figure right. There are 19,648 people in Louisiana named Landry. What's to stop 13 Jeff Landrys showing up on qualifying week and qualifying for governor? That would throw a wrench in this race. Troy Hebert, what do you think?
Well, the first thing I say is the only name that's more popular than Landry's in Louisiana is actually Hebert.
That is correct.
So I don't know what's going to stop a bunch of Hebert's from getting in there, too. Maybe we didn't figure that one out yet. But anyway, let me just say this, too, and I just want to add, I know Trey brought up some good points about the hurricanes. You know, we've been having hurricanes here forever, it seems, and I'll tell you this much. I'll take a hurricane over an earthquake and fires any day of the week. But I also say this. You want to know one of the problems I think that we have, and hopefully Trey agrees with this, is the government responses to this. For example, when you find out that government spent $100,000 giving somebody a FEMA trailer when they could have gave them $100,000 to fix their house, maybe if government was a little smarter on their responses. Anyway, going back to the question, I think the idea of a bunch of Jeff Landry's running, I just don't know if there's any other Jeff Landry like the Jeff Landry we got running.
Yeah, but the name's the same, and then you have to go by address, and I bet most people don't know Jeff Landry lives in New Iberia. So, and I bet there are
Landry's are going to stick together. I'm not sure they're going to be able to find 13 Landry's to go against another Landry.
You might have to spend a little time in the booth defending or finding out that it's Jeffrey Martin Landry at such and such address in New Iberia. But I remember the same thing happened to Edwin Edwards, although there weren't 13. Same thing happened to Mike Foster. And in all those cases, the candidates ended up mysteriously leaving the race after qualifying. But this is something, it's within the boundaries, some would say unfortunately within the bounds of legality, but it would create a mess, I would think, if Joe's scenario were actually happened. What do you think, Trey?
Sounds like there's enough. You could almost find one in every parish, Jim.
19,000, what is it? 19,648 people in Louisiana named Landry. Okay, we haven't talked about
that. That ought to get him in the runoff.
Well, yeah, if they all vote for him, you're right. If they're proud of their last name. It is amazing. What about the debt ceiling negotiations? Who wins, who loses, or is it too early to tell? And will Congress go for it, Trey or so?
It sounds like a lot of people are unhappy with it, so it must have met somewhere in the middle, and so now we just got to see if they're going to vote for it.
All right, Troy, did the speaker win? Did the president win? Who won?
Well, I think America's going to win if we don't default. I mean, obviously, I don't think that defaulting helps anybody, Republicans or Democrats, but I can tell you it does speak to the issue is that, you know, which is why I am conservative, as you know, but I can't be a Republican. Because the Republican problem is that they talk conservative, but they spend money like drunken sailors. Look what's happening in the Louisiana legislature right now. We have super majorities in both chambers, and I don't even think it's a debate to even bust the debt ceiling anymore. So I think philosophy-wise, I don't think we ought to call each other Democrats and Republicans. We ought to divide us up by conservatives and liberals. And a guy like me who's fiscally conservative, but some socially liberal. I think we need to divide ourselves amongst that. But these Republicans who talk a good game, they just don't play a good game.
David in Atlanta, please be concise. We're short going to the break. David, you're on.
Good morning. Clancy Dubo said a piece in the Advocate, I think, yesterday regarding a commercial Jeff Landry is running that points out parishes that need crime enforcement.
All right, we've talked about it. We've talked about it. But what's your question?
Oh, my question is, how racist is Jeff Landry?
All right, we've already addressed that, David. Jake in Ameet. Jake, good morning. You're on. Good morning, Jake.
Good morning. I wanted to say to remind everyone that Alton Sterling was a felon with a gun, and so Blake Salamone did what was right.
All right, but did he have the gun in a position where he could have used it? The video clearly shows he did not, but did he deserve to die? And Blake Salamone fired his weapon. The other officer, Howie Lake, did not. So there you go. It's subject conjecture. Landry made one call, and, of course, City of Baton Rouge made another. Thank you, Trey. Thank you, Troy. We're back with more after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing on the day after Memorial Day, 137 days away from the governor's election, and I'm sure over the course of the next 4.5 months, we'll have a lot of time to discuss it. But we encourage you, if you're not registered, to register, and if you are, to vote, because this is the most important duty of a citizen. And no matter who you're for or against, please make sure you participate. We're joined in studio now by Dr. Berryman from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. She is Dr. Claire Berryman, assistant professor in the Clinical Science Nutritional Physiology Lab, and she is involved in a study regarding low oxygen and weight status. And this is something that affects more people than you would believe. Now, does altitude play a role in weight loss, and why is it easier to lose weight in Colorado, the mile-high city of Denver, versus Louisiana when, as we know, in some places we're below sea level? Good morning to you, Dr. Berryman.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us why it appears that people at 8,500 feet do better than those, let's say those in Aspen do, than those in Ameet. Why?
Yeah, that's a great question. So at high altitude, there's a lot of factors. We think of Colorado, we think of a lot of physical activity and being outdoors. So a lot of our observational research could be confounded by those factors. Is it really the low oxygen? And so what we're going to do with our research study is actually going to look at comparing normal oxygen levels versus low oxygen at sea level. And so the mechanisms behind what causes weight loss at high altitude is that we see increases in energy expenditure and decreases in energy intake.
Now, you were educated at Penn State, one of the great universities, of course, a big football school, I understand.
That's right.
In Happy Valley, and you've been here 9 months, and I suspect you have discerned a bit of a difference between Pennsylvania and Louisiana. So it's the old axiom, does environment play a bigger factor in our health, or is it habits that we have that are not so good? Have we come to grips with which is more profound than the other?
Yeah. Another great question. So is it environment versus nurture versus nature kind of thing? So the study that you mentioned that we're conducting, the low oxygen and weight status study, the LOWS study. So we're looking at controlling people's diets, so giving them an energy restricted diet, because we know diet and exercise are the cornerstone of weight loss strategies. But then we're introducing this new stress or stimulus to try and accelerate or increase the magnitude of weight loss. So it's a little bit, you know, you can have more than one tool in the toolbox.
Dr. Claire Berryman is with us. Her past research includes investigating health and performance of soldiers during training at high altitude, which showed that body weight loss in this healthy population was considered greater at high altitude than under similar conditions at sea level. So there does appear to be a correlation. And why would that be?
Yeah. And so in 2016, we conducted a study at the top of Pikes Peak in Colorado, about 14,000 feet above sea level. And our goal there was to maintain weight and muscle mass and performance in these soldiers. And we didn't do a very good job. They lost about 20 pounds over 3 weeks. And then it became a question of, okay, this is detrimental to soldiers who are training and operating under these extreme environments, but can we harness the hypoxic stimulus, low oxygen stimulus, and bring it to sea level so more people have access to it?
Well, we know when we live in different parts of the world, or in this case, parts of the United States, our skin responds much differently being in Denver, where you're closer to the sun in a drier climate than it does in Louisiana. You get more wrinkles in Colorado. Some of us get wrinkles in Louisiana, but why wouldn't other factors like what we're talking about as far as other health factors be at play when it concerns altitude?
Do you mean like exercise and humidity? So for all the observational studies that have shown people at high altitude have lower prevalence of diseases like type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease and lower weight, that's just observational. And so there's so many factors that can play a role in that. And with our statistical models, we can only control those variables. But in a randomized controlled trial like what we're conducting at Pennington, we're able to control all of those factors. So we'll have the humidity controlled and the amount of time they're in the hypoxic environment, and their meals will be provided to them. So everything will be controlled between the group that gets the low oxygen environment compared to the group that gets the normal oxygen.
Are you looking for participants?
Yes, we are. So if there's anyone out there who is interested in participating in research and aiding in our discovery of strategies to improve health, please go to the Pennington website, and there's a list of, there's information about my study, but also other studies, and that list is continuously updated. My study in particular is looking for participants that are 22 to 45 years of age with obesity and who are willing to sleep in a tent set up around their bed for 8 weeks.
How many participants are you going to have for this?
50 participants.
50 participants.
And we actually have our first participant starting sleeping in the tent tonight.
Okay. Well, Dr. Berryman joined Pennington in August of last year, and she brought with her a $2.3 million grant from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Disease, a division of the National Institutes of Health. And you and your husband, who also is a professor at Pennington, have done research, as we mentioned, with the U.S. Army. And recently, the two served at Florida State University in Tallahassee, which is probably much more like Baton Rouge than College Park, Pennsylvania. You're smiling. So, yeah, Tallahassee is a similar climate and culture. Yeah. In fact, Bobby Bowden, the former football coach, said the two cities ought to be sister cities, Tallahassee and Baton Rouge.
Oh, really?
Yeah, capital cities, major universities, southern. But we also, as we know, and you've alluded to it, we have some bad habits. We don't exercise as much, I hear, in this region as we do in other parts of the country. And diet, of course, the food is good. So sometimes we eat too much, and maybe we don't eat the right things or enough of the right things. So all of this has a factor on health as well. Is there, and a listener asked a good question, this actually is Hal and Monroe about, is there a correlation between lifespan and region? Do we live longer in Pennsylvania as a people than we do in Louisiana?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there is some, again, observational evidence that people live longer at higher altitudes. And actually today, an animal study just came out that showed that lifespan was doubled in these animals that were continually exposed to low oxygen. Now, we're doing intermittent low oxygen exposure, so individuals will sleep in the tent overnight, so it won't impede their day too much. But yes, the answer is it seems that way.
All right, another listener asked a question. This is Mary in Mandeville asking about how you're going to monitor these people. Are you taking them at their word for that they're sleeping in the tent? Or are you watching them?
We are not watching them. No, big brother. We have various ways to monitor compliance, but yes, a lot of it is people communicating with them and, establishing a rapport that they're actually eating the foods we're providing and sleeping in the tent. We do have them wear it's called a pulse oximeter on their finger that measures their oxygen levels overnight. So if they're wearing that and it's dipping, that means they're sleeping in the hypoxic tent. And if it's not dipping, that means they're sleeping in the normoxic tent. I'm blinded though, so somebody else checks compliance to the intervention, but that's one way we're able to assess compliance.
All right. The research trial was funded by your grant, correct?
Yes.
So the $2.3 million you brought with you to Pennington is now being used for this, and it is an important study. And Pennington does work that is often cited nationally and sometimes internationally and doesn't get a lot of play locally. So I'm glad you're here. And you brought your husband. He has a lot of expertise that is similar than yours, but it's a dynamic duo. You're a team, aren't you?
That's right. Yes.
Well, we're glad you're here, and good luck, and we look forward to the results when they are out and about. When do you know when you'll get those?
So we're thinking the study will take probably 2 or 3 years to recruit all 50 participants. We can only run about 6 participants at a time because of the tent system and generator, and the logistics of it. So it'll probably take 2 to 3 years to collect all the data.
Well, thanks for joining us, Dr. Claire Berryman.
Thank
from
you.
The Pennington Biomedical Research Center. And for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Signature support for Talk Louisiana is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Until tomorrow, thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.